When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Dan, well, we've been through years like this. Something's got to give. Maybe this is the week. Maybe finally this is the week.
They're almost all like this, Mully, and a lot of times it isn't the week. And so what happens here if the Bears can't come up with an answer Sunday and then they've got to turn around on a short week and go and play the best team in football in their place? Here we are again. Hi, guys. Good morning.
Hey, buddy.
Morning, yeah. Dan. Yeah, so it's another difficult week of preparation. Maybe another week of dysfunction. You just don't know what to expect at Halas Hall, but it does seem all too familiar. What do you think was, in terms of the offense, the biggest thing for and reason for encouragement? I know it was only 19 points, but when you were where the Bears offense was, 19 points feels like it's worthy of a celebration.
No question, right? Like, and it's a low bar to clear, but to see them put together four scoring drives after the way the offense looked against both the Patriots and the Cardinals, it felt better. You saw a quarterback who was calmer, who was more comfortable. I think Caleb really benefited, number one, from having both offensive tackles back. It just gives you a little bit more stability when you take the snap and you're able to stand back there and scan a little bit. I also thought Thomas Brown did a great job with, I called it yesterday, sensible simplicity. It was just, a lot of short stuff, you know, things that didn't require your quarterback to do a whole lot, a low degree of difficulty on a lot of completions, and they got rolling. Their ability to kind of mix in both running backs too, I think, was significant because you got two different types there with Roshan and DeAndre Swift, and they were able to create balance that we hadn't seen a lot of this season. So again, one game, very small sample size, a lot more to prove in these next two games, but certainly a step in the right direction given where they were.
Well, it's interesting because I agree with what you're saying. It was good to see him get the ball out as fast as he got the ball out. It was good to see them convert on third downs, and a lot of that was, I think he ran for four of them. Uh-huh. I just wonder, Dan, now you're going against a 3-4 defense that's going to be hiding a lot of different looks. Now it's almost like you got to be even faster. You're going to be seeing things that, yep, maybe you haven't seen before, but you're going to have to keep up the pace of what you're doing in terms of getting the ball out in less than 2.5 seconds.
So when the Bears went to Arizona, I was very concerned about how a rookie quarterback with limited experience in this league was going to face that defense, which obviously uses Buda Baker as their chess piece and causes some mental strain pre-snap on you, some mental strain post-snap on you. I would multiply that by two against this Vikings defense because Brian Flores is going to do so many different things that Caleb has never really had to adjust to at this speed at the NFL level, right? Like, you're going to have seven guys at the line of scrimmage. Sometimes they're going to bring five and you're not going to know where the extra guy is coming from. Sometimes they're going to drop eight and you're going to be like, oh God, I thought I was going to face pressure here. And now they're back in coverage. The way that the Vikings use things within their defense, the versatility they have with the players they have, is really, really challenging. And it's going to be like Caleb's going to have to do a Sudoku puzzle right as he takes the snap on every single play that's designed for a pass. So this is going to be a massive challenge. Andrew Van Ginkel leads the Vikings in sacks, playing at a high level. He has two pick sixes as well. You've got a defense, guys, right now that's number one against the run. They lead the league in interceptions. They're top five in scoring. They're top five in sacks. So good luck. You know, this is a totally different challenge and one that I think is going to create a lot of mental strain on Caleb.
So unfortunately, Dan, you have done this kind of thing before. Cover a team and a coach that seems to be nearing his final days or final games, and you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself.
Kiss of death, buddy.
You might be, actually. You arrive in 2013, and then look, all hell breaks loose. But I don't want to. That's a different show, or that's a podcast. So I wonder, when you hear things that start to sound familiar, what are you looking for? Can a team rally around a cause? Is this a situation where you can see players supporting Matt Eberflus or not supporting him by what they aren't saying? How are you approaching this in that context about maybe what could be the final weeks of the Matt Eberflus tenure?
First of all, I want you guys to know that during my time covering the Vikings, the guys on the beat called me the Vikings Whisperer because things were so calm and so successful during my time there. The last season that I covered the Vikings, Adrian Peterson won an MVP award and the Vikings went to the playoffs. So I'm going to push back adamantly that I'm the Kiss of Death, although we could rename the podcast Kiss of Death if that's what we need to do.
Might have to.
Because they're never taking the North.
To your other question, David, it gets a little bit painful when you're in late November and December in these seasons that you know are cooked. This one feels like it's cooked. The Bears can do something in these next two games by winning at least one, maybe two of them. That's a huge challenge. And so all of a sudden you're staring down the barrel of a team that went into the bye week 4-2 and may struggle to get to seven wins. As we talked about last week, like there's not a lot of gimme victories left on your schedule. For the guys that are here for the long term, the playmakers that are going to be part of this nucleus for years to come, they've got to stay completely immersed in building the program, understanding that it's probably going to be in other people's hands, come February 1st, but you still have to be sort of steadfast and disciplined in the way you approach every day to make sure that you're not wasting any time and catching up. Because guys, guess what? You're in a division here that isn't going to slow down anytime soon. And maybe the most depressing thing about this whole thing, and I tweeted a little bit about it last night, is Matt Eberflus is the worst coach in the NFC North by two country miles, right? When you look at Campbell and LaFleur and Kevin O'Connell, who was hired 20 days after Matt and somehow has twice as many wins as he does after 44 games.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, look, I'm trying to keep a separation of church and state, but we talked about it earlier in terms of Joe Douglas getting fired. You know, you have the same record the coach has. Now, in this case, both guys came in at the same point. I understand what a rebuild is. I understand where things have gone wrong, but goodness gracious, you know, they're trying out five safeties yesterday. That really makes your stomach sink because we know Jaquan Brisker's not coming back anytime soon, and now Elijah Hicks, who was pretty good as a replacement, now you're looking at a third safety maybe, depending on what the injury report looks like this week. So, I mean, who wears that? You look at you know, we talk about the offensive line and everyone gets to that all the time. We talked about the defensive line yesterday. We haven't talked a lot about that, but they barely were breathing heavy on the quarterback last week. And that was a game where you were hoping that Montez Sweat could do a Superman routine. He seems pretty banged up. Billings is out. They're not getting the lift they once had from some of these other guys. I don't know how to feel about a Zach Pickens. Is he still hurt? I don't know if Dexter has got some issues. What's happening? It feels like you're not getting the delivery on either side of the line of scrimmage.
100%, right? And so, like, you had a game last week where, you know, I'm watching it back and I'm saying, when's the last time we felt Tremaine Edmonds in a football game, right? Like, this is a guy you invested a lot of money into to be an impact playmaker, and it's been a while since he's made an impact. Montez Sweat has been hurt and disappointing. The Bears are bottom half of the league in sacks. You know, your takeaway faucet is still on, but it's not flowing the way it once was. And you get vibes. It's like 2019 Cubs vibes with Craig Kimbrell, where you've got a defense that's supposed to be your closer, but the production doesn't match the reputation.
Cup
right?
reference like, in a faucet metaphor. Wow. Yeah, wow. You're rolling today, Dan.
But I mean, like that defense had the football game in their hands the other day, right? Yes. There's 4.5 minutes left and you're in there to close, and then your best player falls down. And I know Jalen said on these airwaves just a few days ago that it was going to be an interception if it wasn't a 60-yard catch. Well, it wasn't. It was a 60-yard catch, and I disagree with him vehemently that he was going to be able to pick that pass off. He fell down. The Packers got 60. They scored a game-winning touchdown, and you've got to wear that. You've got to own that, and you put that with a game that they couldn't close earlier in the year. You put them with games they couldn't close last year against the Broncos, the Lions, the Browns, and you say, well, wait a minute. Like, this defense is supposed to be the unit that finishes things. You know, sure, they did it in week one against the Titans, but you're supposed to, if you want to be elite, if you want to be top five, we heard top five, top five, top five all through April, May, and June, then be top five and finish football games and don't leave it up to a kicker at the end to have to get a higher trajectory on a 46-yard field goal.
Those are great points. That's tremendous insight. Okay.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
So let's look at Sunday's game. I look at the Vikings coming in with Brian Flores. They're going to throw everything at Caleb Williams. That's going to be a fascinating game inside the game. I also look at Brian Flores and I wonder this. Is he going to be a top head coaching candidate at the end of the season if the Vikings defense continues on this path? And has he outlived or outgrown the connection to his last stop and the reasons maybe he hasn't been hired as a head coach again? Because when you remove some of those things, and we're talking about, we have a team that might be looking for a head coach, and we've got a team that might have one of the top candidates available in the hiring season. Brian Flores was pretty good at Miami. Do you think he could emerge as a guy who becomes the source of a lot of conversation in Chicago in a couple months?
Wow.
There's two different questions there for me. One is, will Brian Flores be a guy whose name is hot on the head coaching candidate circle? 100%. When we're talking about Chicago, we need somebody to oversee the development of the quarterback here, don't we, guys? Like, I mean, are we gonna make that mistake twice and not be able to figure out what that's gonna look like?
You need a head coach. You need a leader.
Yeah, but if they make a change, I agree with you 100%, Dan. If they make a change at the end of the year, they want to bring in someone who can be with Caleb Williams not for a year, not
for 10.
Exactly. They want to bring in someone who can bring an offense and be there and be a quarterback whisperer, and then you can worry about your defense and bring people in, and hopefully someone stays. But, you know, you can't – we're talking about his third coordinator starting next year. It better be someone who's going to be here more than a year.
And David, I'll just ask you to shift your vision like 4 feet to the left. Look at Kevin O'Connell. Look what Kevin O'Connell has done in the three seasons that he's been there, because he is so good at connecting with his quarterbacks. Yes, he did it with Kirk Cousins, but he's had to win games with Josh Dobbs. He's had to put Nick Mullins out on the field at times. He's resurrected Sam Darnold here within this season, to the point where people are going, wait a second, Sam Darnold is the starting quarterback of an 8-2 football team? And so you look at all of the things that Kevin O'Connell has done, and you say, man, it would have been nice if we had a shot at him. Oh, wait, right? Like, these are the types of questions that you have to ask yourself, and you have to kind of examine what is creating that success up there, because I don't think any of us would sit here and say that the Vikings roster over the last three seasons has been head and shoulders above where the Bears are. And yes, the Bears tore it down in 2022, but Kevin O'Connell's got 28 wins. Matt Eberflus has got 14. There's something in the coaching style and the way that he has brought out results of his football team that is worth examining. And then you try to find yourself one of those guys, because it's not like these guys, as Brad tells you with offensive linemen, they don't grow on trees, and you just better select right. And the Bears have a long documented history of selecting wrong.
And look at his record in one score games. Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah.
Oh, yep.
It's the opposite of what Matt Eberflus is.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about that, and I don't want to keep harping on the end of the game, Dan, but it's worthy of a question, which is, at the end of the game, Caleb Williams leads the Bears to I think they got, after the two sacks, it gets to 3rd and 18 or 3rd and 19.
Yep.
He completes a pass to Rome Odunze. And then on fourth down, he completes a fourth and three or fourth and two, whatever it was, to Keenan Allen. And, you know, they run a running play, but it was almost like Eberflus was in such shock that they were in field goal range that he just wanted it to stop and kick the field goal. It's like he didn't, after what had happened to get there and the kind of miraculous finish that you needed to get into range, it was almost like he was satisfied with where he was on the field. This guy can kick a 40. Let's go.
Never expected this.
Exactly. And then they went back and looked at the Allen play, which was there was no need to, but they did. So
maybe
that sequencing of plays was as much the reason he wanted to get to the field goal as sitting back and thinking through, well, wait a minute, the guy's 70 of 70 from 40.
Yeah, inside
and,
40, yeah.
Maybe we should try to improve this spot. Do you see what I'm saying? It was almost
100%.
Like...
100%. But that's who Matt is, right? And,
yes.
And so Keenan Allen made that catch with 46 seconds to play. You've got time to run two more plays if you want. You've got a timeout in your bag. As you said, they reviewed the play, and then the Packers took timeout after the review to preserve time. So you had a lot of clubs in your bag, and you just chose the most conservative one. I would tell you to go back to last year in Detroit when they blew that game at Ford Field and they got inside the red zone at one point and then he just kind of turtled and didn't try to score a touchdown and settled for the field goal. And then you blew a 12 point lead in the final minutes. And it was, you know, there's two parts to that. It's number one, you're leaning on your unit, your defense that you think is going to close football games. Well, guess what? As we documented just a few minutes ago, they're not doing it consistently enough. And the other part is you're just kind of wired conservatively by nature, which is what a lot of defensive coaches are. They would rather take the ball out of their quarterback's hands and put it in their defense's lap and say, win us this football game. When it doesn't work out, you've got to answer to that. And so it wasn't out of character for Matt Eberflus to do what he did. It was just wrong and it cost him a football game.
Yeah.
There's been too many times over the last 3 years that those types of decisions have cost them football games. And it's why, as David said at the outset, that the clock is ticking. The sand in the hourglass is rapidly draining up there.
So Dan, you've asked all the right questions and you were there on Sunday. I just curious, clear this up because some people keeps coming up and I don't think it's accurate. Cairo Santos wanted the ball on the left hash because of the way the wind was blowing, and he had comments post-game that suggested that, because I keep hearing that the ball was on the wrong hash and he likes it on the right hash, and maybe that's the way he typically does. But didn't he say that he, because of the wind, wanted it where it was?
He didn't say that specifically, and it is on my list today to follow up on, because this is harkens back to, we're always going back in history, right?
And he referenced the wind, though.
He said left hash, left to right wind, and felt like he hit a solid ball and the kick still missed. But I don't know if that was the preference. We're gonna have to find out a little bit. Remember, we may not get fully honest answers, but you guys remember 2019 after the Chargers game when Eddie Pinheiro let us know that the ball was not on the proper hash mark for his preference, and he missed a kick by 5 inches to the left, and they lost a football game, and it was a whole to-do about whether the Bears are on top of their details when it matters most. What we've seen with this football team is they're not on their details when it matters most. It happened with the Hail Mary. It happened with the protection on the field goal. It happens so often that we're always here on Wednesday morning, having these conversations instead of, boy, how great was it that your rookie quarterback for the second time in 4 weeks stepped up and led your team on a fourth quarter drive that, you know, created the glory that everybody's been seeking in this city for a while. So this is our existence, guys. I'm sorry that we have to kind of keep doing it, but you guys are used to it more than I am.
I got to tell you though, Dan, that, you know, I know it's just a matter of fact. Yeah. The guy led them to two fourth quarter comebacks and they lost both games.
Right.
That's as damning a quarterback development issue as there is out there. You can't throw away his achievements, which build his confidence, which make, you know,
his resume.
The national storyline would be a lot different about him if they had won those games, which frankly he had won at the end of the game.
And you don't think those things matter. Those things matter. A 23-year-old kid gets up in the morning and turns on his TV and sees the entire world talking about how heroic he was rather than your organization that you play for is an absolute mess. It's different psychologically. Now, Caleb's really strong And he's done a great job over the last 6 months of kind of weathering a lot of things in this organization. But those things do matter, that you can't squander those. And as you say, Mully, this is a guy that stepped up and showed that he has that juice in the game on the line moments. And I will say this, significant in a despondent locker room on Sunday and again on Monday afternoon at Halas Hall is the belief that the Bears players took out of that, the fact that their quarterback at this stage of his rookie season has done it twice now, where he said, look, like, I don't care what's happened up to this point, the game is our hands, and I'm going to go down and lead us to something really fun. And he backed it up. And so there is belief that's swelling inside that locker room and what Caleb can do on a more regular basis than that. Just got to get him in more competent hands sooner rather than later, so that you know, next year it's a win in a playoff chase instead of a loss and a uh-oh, here we go, we're headed for reboot again.
Great stuff, Dan. Thank you, buddy. Great stuff.
Thanks, Dan.
Always good talking to you guys. See you later.
That is Dan Wiederer from the Tribune. Great stuff.